Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call to order the June 14th hearing of the Clark County Land Use Hearings Examiner. My name is Daniel Cairns, and I'll be presiding over tonight's agenda, which consists of two subdivisions. Let me begin with an introduction to me and a description of how the process is going to work this evening. First of all, I and one other person was served by appointment from the Board of County Councilors to hear land use applications and to decide development proposals in unincorporated Clark County. It's our job to provide an independent evaluation, to review the record, review the application, review all comments and staff reports, and then to convene a hearing such as this, take public testimony, and ultimately to decide whether these applications meet or don't meet the applicable land use approval criteria. Those are the development standards that are in the county code at the time these applications are submitted, and those are the approval standards that govern my decision on both of these items. It's not my job to be more stringent nor more lenient than those criteria allow, but rather to interpret them as they are fairly written and decide whether there's evidence in the record to show that those criteria are met. If there is a preponderance of evidence to show that they're met, then I'm obligated to approve these applications. Understanding also that sometimes these criteria can be met through conditions of approval. So that's basically my job and how I function. I'm also required to provide an impartial evaluation of these, and I believe that I am with regard to both of the items on tonight's agenda. I don't have any business, familial, or any other relationship with the applicants or any parties who have weighed in so far. I haven't had any pre-hearing contacts other than to review the record on each of these items, and I've had my record for about 2 weeks now. If you would like, you feel free to question me about any such contacts or impartiality or bias during the public testimony portion of the item you're here for. With regard to each of these items, we'll take them in order in which they appear on the agenda. We'll begin with a staff report, which is a verbal rendition of the written staff report that was issued prior to tonight's hearing. I think there are still copies of the staff reports for both of these items back on the table. The staff report is basically a roadmap for the approval criteria that apply and control each of these applications, and the staff report discusses the evidence that's in the record to support whether these criteria are met or not. After the staff report, then the applicant gets to speak and provide their primary presentation. For you applicants out there, you can assume I've read the application, I'm familiar with the proposal, and there are three important things I would like to get from you during your testimony. First of all, are there any changes? I need to know what is the current, most recent proposal before me. Sometimes coming into these hearings, the preliminary plat proposal will change a little bit. I need to know what's actually at stake, what's the proposal before me tonight after all those changes. Second, I need to have specific comments, corrections, or challenges to the proposed findings and conditions that are in the staff report. If staff has misunderstood something or the findings aren't quite correct or the conditions aren't lawful or aren't relevant or there's something wrong, I need to know particularly your view of those. And if the findings and conditions are fine and correct, let me know that also. And the third thing is, if there is opponent testimony on your proposal that'll come afterwards, keep note of the issues raised by opponents. Oftentimes, the public testimony comes in the form of questions about how the development's going to work, how the transportation impacts are going to affect them, how the stormwater system functions, those sorts of things. And in that context, the applicant and their design team are in the best position to respond to those kinds of questions. So during your final rebuttal, I'd ask you to take a shot at responding to a lot of these public testimony questions that come up. After the applicant's presentation, I'll take testimony from anyone else in favor. After that, anyone with neutral testimony or questions. And after that, anyone opposed to the proposal. That's opposed to the approval of these subdivisions. After the opponent testimony, the applicant gets final rebuttal. On all these matters, the applicant has the last word because the applicant has the burden of proof, the burden of proving that they have met all of the approval criteria that apply to their proposal. After the applicant's final rebuttal, I'll come back to staff to see if there's any additional comment they have in light of the testimony that's come in. And it's my typical habit to close the record after the parting comments from staff and take the matter under consideration. I do not typically issue a verbal ruling about these applications tonight. Instead, you'll have to wait for my decision to come out in writing. That occurs approximately 2 weeks after the record closes. If you need additional time to formulate testimony or to respond to issues that have come up, you can ask for a continuance or that the record be kept open. If you want either of those things, you need to make that request during the public testimony portion of the hearing. So basically, if you want the record to be kept open, you need to make that request while the record is still open. If you have that kind of request, we can talk about scheduling, that sort of thing. If you would like a continuance or an open record, give me some justification for that and specific issues that you're angling for. My decisions are final and can be appealed to Superior Court through the State Land Use Petition Act. To appeal one of my decisions, though, you need to participate either orally through testimony tonight or in writing. You can submit any number of written comments into the record. But you have to participate. You need to raise before me any legal issue that you would want to preserve for a subsequent appeal. And you need to present to me any evidence that you would want to rely upon for a subsequent appeal. So when I say that because, as I mentioned, my habit is to close the record at the conclusion of testimony, and that will end your ability to raise issues or submit evidence. So it's coming down to it. This is kind of the focused end of the proceeding. And a decision should be issued within 2 weeks following close of the record on these items. Here are some basic guidelines for presenting testimony tonight. First of all, only do so in that order I just recited. When it's time for your category to testify, come up to this table in front of me, speak into the microphones, begin with your name and mailing address. Part of the record I'm compiling tonight is an audio recording of the proceeding, and so only if you speak in a microphone pretty closely will your testimony be recorded and become part of the permanent record. Also, when you testify, be sure to submit at the beginning any evidence or documents you want me to consider. You can give those to the clerk, and he will give them an exhibit stamp, make them part of the permanent record. Be prepared to leave them, and you won't get those back, because they would be part of that record for any subsequent appeal that would go to Superior Court. Also, when you testify, you should limit your comments to the approval criteria and how the application meets or doesn't meet those criteria. As I mentioned, the staff report is a good roadmap in that regard, but understand that my authority is limited quite strictly to those approval criteria, so that's why you need to tailor your testimony to those criteria. If you agree with testimony that other people have provided, just let me know that. You don't need to repeat prior testimony. I'll ascribe those points to you, and you can move on to your next point. If you represent somebody else, let me know who you're representing. Oftentimes I get that with neighborhood groups. And that is it by way of a basic procedural rundown. If people have questions going forward, feel free to ask those during the course of the hearing. As I mentioned, we'll take these two items in the order in which they're on the agenda. The first one is the Legacy Mountain Vista Subdivision, PLD 2017-80, 3.5 acres into 23 lots, split zone in 5 phases. With that, I'll take a staff report, please.
Good evening, Mr. Examiner. My name is Amy Wooten. I'm the land use planner assigned to the proposed project. Next to me is David Bottomini, representing Development Engineering. Tonight, we are here to discuss the proposed Legacy Mount Vista subdivision. The applicant proposes 23 new residential lots on approximately 3.5 acres in the R22 and R175 zones. This project, as you stated, is proposed in five phases. Staff's role tonight is to provide an overview and summary of the applicant's proposal, identify any major outstanding issues or concerns, and make a recommendation to you. The subject site is located on Northeast 144th Street at Northeast 22nd Avenue and is depicted on the vicinity map with the black dots. On this map, the subject site is depicted in red. As you can see, the site is zoned both R175 and R22. All of the surrounding area is zoned R22 and R175 as well. Surrounding uses include established single-family residential and to the northeast and south, and apartments to the west. The subject site in this aerial photo is outlined in red. It is comprised of four lots totaling 3.5 acres. Staff has several pictures of the site. This picture is taken near the southwest corner of the R22 parcel looking northeasterly. This photo is of the shop. It's in the location of proposed lots 10 and 11, which will be removed during phase five of the development. This picture shows Northeast 22nd Avenue, which will provide access to the 8 attached single-family lots that are proposed. This photo is of Northeast 144th Street. I'm standing just west of 22nd Avenue. And the last photo was taken at the top of the hill on 144th Street, looking west. I'm at the existing driveway for the Gaudette's home near the center of the site. The site is zoned R22 and R175. The R22 zone prescribes a density range between 15 and 22 dwelling units per acre with a minimum lot size of 1,500 square feet. Lots in this zone require a minimum width of 18 feet and a minimum depth of 50 feet. The applicant proposes 8 new lots for attached single-family development that meets these requirements. The R175 zone requires a minimum lot area of 7,500 square feet and an average maximum lot size of 10,500 square feet. Lot minimum width and depth are prescribed at 50 and 90 feet, respectively. The applicant proposes 15 lots in the R175 zone with an average lot size of 7,924 square feet, which meets these standards. This application required a technical road modification approval. The applicant requested relief from roadway circulation standards that would have required north-south cross circulation. The road mod was approved by the road mod committee on May 23rd. Also during the review period, the applicant, the application was placed on hold due to some site distance issues and due to a letter received from the Gaudettes who had concerns regarding the project's proposed phasing plan. Staff met with the applicant's engineer on site to resolve the site distance issues as noted in Exhibit 33 and resolved issues with the Gaudettes as noted in Exhibit 20. The application was submitted to Clark County on November 21st of 2017. Staff completed a comprehensive review of the applicant's proposal and issued a report and recommendation for approval on May 30th of 2018. At that time, the SEPA determination of non-significance became final. There was no appeal. The public comment period for this project closed March 9th of 2018. No comments from the general public were received. Based on the staff report and recommendation issued May 30th of this year, staff finds that all land use development criteria can be met with this proposal and hereby recommends the examiner approve the Legacy Mount Vista subdivision application as conditioned. Thank you. Staff is available if you have any questions, Mr. Examiner.
Thank you. I guess I don't know that I have any land use questions. Maybe these are more engineering. Site distance seemed to be kind of a complicated matter. Is that in your wheelhouse, Mr. Bottomini?
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Examiner. David Bottomini, Development Engineering. Yes, there are. You could go back to the photograph of the going up, looking up the road. we're going to go back to one of these photographs here. You'll see the hill here and an arrow pointing toward.
So that's 144th facing east?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And so due to the slope of the road, sort of the topography, the relatively narrow width of the road, vegetation and so forth, we did engage the applicant with respect to potential concerns regarding site distance and attempted to work out proposed, or I should say, mitigation measures in which the applicant will be addressing through their final.
Where's the site distance limited? Is it at cars entering 144th from 22nd, or is it up on the hill? At 23rd.
This finding here is addresses their access to 144th Street.
Off of, from 22nd. Or 23rd.
Let me see. 22nd.
Okay. Okay. So those are the offending shrubberies there.
Correct. Some of it you'll see here. Some of it's a little difficult to.
Yeah. What's this structure in front of the where the red arrow is kind of touching? What is that thing? Looks like a tent.
Right here.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, construction fence.
Yeah.
Okay. That goes away. All right.
And the applicant can speak a little bit more to this. So,
okay, I see that the county pulled out the big guns, and the conditions, two conditions are proposed here. So no parking along 144th near this intersection, is that right?
Correct.
And then the final, the traffic engineer for the applicant has to basically sign off on it.
That's correct, and this will be reviewed by traffic engineer within Public Works.
Okay. So that's it?
Yes, that's it, unless you have any additional questions for me.
No. Any other transportation issues? Concurrency seems fine.
I don't think so. As previously mentioned, there was an approval of a road modification for relief from circulation to the north.
Yeah.
Primarily due to the slope to the north and habitat and so forth. And but it was the site distance issue, which was sort of more of the challenging issue.
I've never seen a record that has so many documents related specifically to site distance.
Mm-hmm. There have been challenges related to site distance with this road specifically and this stretch of roadway due to the slope of the road and vertical curve.
What's the posted speed on 144th?
Don't have that in front of me right now, actually.
It's probably in the site.
I can have the applicant provide the...
Okay.
The posted speed limit.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
I think maybe 25 miles per hour, but I'll have the applicant confirm that.
Okay. Any stormwater issues?
I don't think so. I think that, I mean, it's a feasible proposal. You'll see the finding there. I think it is spelled out here. In the finding, and I'm talking about finding number 38 specifically. So you'll see that it is a combination of, it's primarily detention, actually, with some infiltration proposed.
In the tracts or in the street?
Well, it is on site within the roadways, but there's also a facility within the road, within 144th specifically, as I recall, within the frontage.
Okay.
And it has been worked out such that there is an outlet and a downstream conveyance that has been accounted for with the property to the west. You'll see that in the finding as well.
Okay. Let's see. One final question. I think this is for you, Ms. Wooten. So the only attached lots for proposed for attached dwellings are phase one. Is that right? Phase one in the R22 section.
Yeah.
Okay, and those are 8 lots. Everything else is detached single family.
Yeah, they're the 1A through 8B.
Okay.
Or 1A through 8A.
Got it. Okay. Good enough. I think that's it. I'll take the applicant's presentation now, please.
Good evening. My name is James Kessi, K-E-S-S-I. I'm the project civil engineer and project manager. My address is 6400 Northeast Highway 99, number G169, Vancouver 98665. And first of all, I just wanted to say that in general, we are in agreement with the staff report and the findings and the conditions of approval. And we appreciate what the staff to their efforts to work through and come up with some solutions on the site. As far as your questions on site distance, the primary concern was the proposed, or it's actually an existing access down at 22nd Avenue. So if you look, actually, right there. So site distance westbound, looking west where that construction fence, and that's actually fine. It is 25 miles an hour. So a typical 250 feet site distance is required, stopping site distance. That exit driveway, north or private street at Northeast 22nd Avenue is there. It actually went through the county standards and was approved under the county standards where it's located.
How long ago?
Probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago. So not that long ago. It's pretty much at the same standards.
Just to give me perspective, how far up the road is 250 feet?
250 feet.
So I assume it's beyond that construction sign, but not as far as the hill peak.
250 feet from that driveway looking eastbound would put you approximately, if you look, it's about where 23rd comes in. So if you look a little bit, yeah, right about in there, that's about 250 feet.
Okay, got it. There's a little bench there, it seems like.
Yes, so the primary concern, and part of it is there's what's been happening is that there have been some vehicles that will tend to park there because that's a wider part of the street.
Oh.
And so one of the conditions, if you look in the recommended conditions of approval, would be to stripe that as no parking. So if someone parked right where that diagonal or the diamond sign is right there, right along that strip. So we're looking at, Condition number one was the applicant will need to provide mitigation by parking restriction in the vicinity of the development access. The restriction signs will be installed by county forces under a reimbursable work order. So that's actually a typical practice that all traffic signing, no parking signing would be installed by the county. And so it's to their standards at the time when the development is under construction and completed.
Was there a question as to how far this no parking zone should extend?
The real question was just establishing, it'll, my guess is that it'll the entire portion from the driveway, 22nd Avenue drive, or I should say private street, from 22nd Avenue east all the way up to that portion will be labeled as no parking.
All the way up to 23rd.
Probably, yes. There's really not, after you go past, you can barely see where that diamond sign is. There's some there's a barricade in there, a county barricade. You see the diagonal hashing?
Yeah.
Okay. So it'll be striped up, no parking up to that point. And then the street kind of narrows down, so there's really not any, people don't park that in that section. It's within the travel lane. So
is that also the lot up there? Is that where the Godets live?
The Godets live farther up to the east. It's a little bit. It's farther up the hill.
Okay, so they aren't affected by this no parking thing.
No.
Okay.
And so the one mitigation was parking restriction, mm-hmm. and then as Mr. Bottomini had said that at the time of the final application, then there will be a site distance certification. So a lot of times it's hard to certify that until you actually have the construction done and
right.
you have all the.
But these are fairly standard conditions.
These are standard conditions, and it's a standard situation. It was just difficult. There, you know, we might have to trim up some brush there. So we'll. That was part of the finding, was just to make sure that we can provide the site distance, which will be done at final.
Okay.
Do you have any more questions on that?
Nope.
Okay. And then the other question was storm facilities. So if you could put back up the site plan or the phasing plan, that's probably the best one. Yeah, that one that you just had up there. I'll be fine.
You wanted the phase?
That one. Perfect. So the stormwater is designed to, there's actually three primary stormwater facilities. One would be located in phase one. And it is a combination of detention and with a minor component of infiltration, but the primary method of detention is underground storage tanks. Mm-hmm. And located in phase one within the street area. The second one would be located in phase two, and both of them would be in the Hammerhead area. And then the third one would be located within the public right-of-way, in essence just to the I guess south of phase three, right on the edge there in the public right of way. And that one is set up to be, would serve whenever phases three, four, and five would develop. And that's intended to handle that. So each phase and each facility is specifically designed to have the capacity to handle that phase or the phases with it, if that makes sense. And then the primary release point is right at the southwest corner of lot 7A. In phase one.
Okay, got it. Let's see, the road modification is fairly straightforward. You've got owner consent to do all this. What else?
Those are the primary issues. If there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but you know, the staff report was well written and complete, and so I think we're well on our way to being able to meet all the code requirements.
Okay. No, I don't. Things seem pretty straightforward now that the dust has settled and the issues have been resolved. It seems like it wasn't quick or easy, but we're there now. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify in favor? Anyone with neutral testimony or questions? Anyone opposed? Anyone at all? Okay. Staff, any parting comments? Anything to add?
I don't have anything additional.
Okay. With that, I will close the record on this item. Take it under consideration. I'll issue a written decision in approximately 2 weeks. Thank you. That's item one. Item two, this is sort of a challenge to pronounce. Munio Cluster Subdivision. Someone correct me as we go forward here. PLD 2017-65. Large copy plans. Rural Cluster Subdivision, 5 buildable lots, 6 remainder lot, I think is already developed. Zoning is R5, 27.3 acres. So when we're ready, I'll take a staff report, please.
Good evening. My name is Jan Bazala. I'm with Community Development, Land Use Planner. On my left is Ivar Christensen, the Development Engineer. So this project is a proposal to divide 27.3 acres into six residential lots in the R5 zoning district. The applicant is proposing to use the cluster provisions to create five lots that are roughly 2 acres and one lot of 17.76 acres. The applicant is Joma Design, and the owners are Wade and Ruthie Munio. I think that I pronounced that reasonably accurate. Let's see. So the project is located about 3 miles northeast of the center. The two dots indicate the two lots. So it's currently two tax lots. And the zoning on the site, again, is R5. It's R5 to the west, to the north, and to the east. To the south is zoned FR40. And you'll note the orientation of the lot. The plat that we'll see later is turned 90 degrees, so it's easy to get a little bit confused.
I hate that.
So here's the aerial of the site. There's a single-family residence and a shop and a pool. Currently, and those are located in the southern third of the overall site. Access is via an existing driveway that takes access onto 384th Street to the north. The northeast corner has
284th?
384th.
The plan says two.
Okay. Well, it is 384th.
Yeah, I think that's the 300 series out there by the center, so.
Anyway, there's some standing trees remaining on much of the site. Some of the site has been logged in 2016 down in the southeast area, in the southern area, and also in the northwest corner. There are some orchards located south of the existing residents. There are a couple type NS, non-fish-bearing streams. One comes through from the north and kind of meanders around to the west of the house. There's another one that's located partially off-site and then comes through the southeast promontory of the site. I guess the big thing in the project was that the width of 384th is substandard. Per engineering conditions, the roadway will need to be widened to a minimum of 18 feet with turnouts provided per the applicant's road modification proposal. Here's the plat. Again, we're turned 90 degrees, so this is north to the left. Cluster lights are located. Cluster lots are located on the northern half of the site. Again, they range between, I think, 1.56 acres and 2 acres. The remainder lot is 65% of the overall site, which meets code requirements.
And it's already developed, right?
Yes. Yeah, the house and the shop are down here.
So the owners, that's where they live?
Yes.
Okay.
So access to these four lots is proposed to be from the existing driveway that's there now. The proposal was to have lot two access onto 384th Street in this location here. The applicant submitted a road modification because there's not adequate site distance in this area. Public Works recommendation is to deny that road modification because it appears that there can be alternate access provided. The idea is that it could come off of this existing driveway here and cut across here. Staff also notes that if there is other areas along if there's other areas that might meet site distance, that could be still a possibility, but we're not sure if that's going to be feasible or not. and the applicant may have more to say about that.
Do you know what the posted speed is on 384th?
It's unposted, so the 50 mile per hour rule applies.
50?
Yep.
So one of the things that we note is that if a driveway has to be provided from this driveway here, then that'll trip, you'll be over four lots. So you'll have to construct this road to a private road standard instead of a driveway, private driveway standard, because you'll be over four lots at that point, if that is what happens.
Okay. So the road mod is denied, and options are either find a way to achieve site distance or do the take the driveway for lot two off of the common driveway, which would make that have to be built to private road standards, just a little more elaborate standard.
Yes, yes. Now, there may be other ways to rearrange the access for the other lots. The applicant can discuss that if he wishes. So there may still be a way to keep everything down to four lots with the driveway, depending upon how they would like to do that.
Okay.
Again, if a driveway is constructed in this area for lot two, then a habitat permit would be needed because this is a riparian habitat. There appears to be remnants of a logging road in this area. We believe it's somewhere at this boundary. And so,
how much of the development property has got habitat designation?
I'm not sure what the I didn't do the calculations on the percentage of lot area that's encumbered with habitat.
Okay. What is the habitat type that's there?
It's a NS. It's a
okay. So it's a fish, non-fish bearing stream. That's the only habitat we're talking about.
Yes.
Okay. And what's the geologic hazard basis? Is it mapped or is it sloped?
Or what's I will let Ivar discuss that.
It is mapped as a landslide hazard area, I believe.
Okay.
But it's mainly due to the steep slopes.
Okay.
Let's see. So while we're talking about habitat, the cluster provisions try to steer cluster lots away from habitat areas. Mm-hmm. The applicant discussed this because, you know, there is a habitat area on these cluster lots down here. The applicant noted that the idea was to construct as little additional road as possible and preserve the area of orchard trees down here. And given that most of the habitat ends up on the remainder lot and that the buildable or the areas that are not encumbered with habitat are still pretty much at least 1 acre for all the cluster lots. And 1 acre minimum is the basic minimum area for cluster lots. So staff believes that the intent of the cluster provisions are met as they can be given the circumstances. So one issue is that the survey provided with the initial application noted there was a fence encroachment along the west boundary in this area. And by staff calculations, it amounted to about 3/100 of an acre, more or less. So
where's the, I assume it's like the fence and a wedge of?
Yeah, it's on the survey, which actually you don't have. I have a blown up copy of it, but the fence encroachment was shown starting about 3 feet in and tapering down. Now, the applicant noted that this did not make it in the staff report, but the applicant noted in his response in the early issues that the fence had been removed since the survey was done.
Uh-huh.
And he noted that the applicant or that the other owner was notified. I did not pursue that because it went off my radar screen, so I'm not totally sure what to do with that. I would still suggest that we get something in the record from this property owner stating that he was okay with that, although now that the fence is gone.
Look into it.
Yeah.
So okay, well, we have a standard set of a standard condition to deal with these sorts of things, but even if this wedge is carved out of this development property, it meets all the dimensional standards and area.
Well, it's very close. The total acreage of the site, you know, if you deduct, if you take out that wedge, and I'm not a surveyor, so I didn't, I'm not qualified to do it, but it comes pretty darn close to the minimum that's required.
What's the minimum?
They get a 10% bonus for clustering. So they need to have 27.28 acres under their ownership in order to to meet the six lot standard.
Okay.
Or this is a six lot density.
All right, we'll hear what the applicant says about the resolution of the encroachment.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't realize it was that close.
Yeah, it's pretty tight. Now, you know, if they can't get that, there are a couple options. There's a parcel to the east that appears that they could give up. I mean, if they did a boundary line adjustment, they could obtain additional property. They would have to have a boundary line adjustment reviewed. But, again, maybe the issue is moot. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. The minimum lot width for cluster lots is 100 feet. Minimum lot depth is 140 feet. And the minimum lot area is 1 acre. Mm-hmm. All the cluster lots meet these requirements. Now, in the staff report, I went on to some length to discuss that if access for lot two comes in from this area here, that it's going to muck up the lot depth.
Mm-hmm.
You can scratch that, because I just realized today that lot two, if it gets access via an easement, will actually qualify as a flag lot. And the code was changed in December to allow it to be able to interpret the lot depth by the greater dimension of the lot. So,
oh yeah, okay.
It fixes that issue, which is kind of silly to start with. But anyway, it's no longer an issue. So you can revise land use finding 4 basically to say that the cluster lots meet the lot standards.
Okay. If the access for lot 2 is reoriented.
Yes.
Otherwise?
They still do. They do now. Either way, they either do meet or will meet the standards.
Okay. Okay.
So, there was a timber harvest was approved by DNR in 2016, and all DNR approved forest practices in the rural areas are subject to an automatic 6-year moratorium on development activities. Therefore, the applicant had to apply for a moratorium waiver. The county forester reviewed the moratorium waiver application and found it to be in good standing, and there were no forestry conditions of approval that were needed for this. So the forester's findings are integrated into the staff report.
Mm-hmm.
And again, no other forestry conditions were found to be needed for that.
Okay.
As such, that concludes my planned report.
Usually the other cluster subdivision is pretty straightforward. This had a number of jigs and jags to it.
Yes. Oh, one thing I did mean to mention. Per the survey, the existing driveway that runs here, it veers off the site a little bit. Per the survey.
Jiggle your mouse. It went to
so there's a long driveway along the east property line. So it's actually it runs along lot 5, lot 4.
Okay.
And so this driveway is going to provide access to the remainder lot.
Hmm. Okay.
And according to the survey, this driveway veers off onto the other property. So there's a condition of approval that the encroachment be resolved. And so that could be done either by moving the driveway or obtaining an easement from the property owner to contain the driveway easement, because right now it's off kilter.
That happens in the rural zones.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's all I got.
Okay. That's kind of interesting. Mr. Christensen, there's not much.
No, my colleague Jan did an excellent summary, and I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I'll take the applicant's presentation now, please.
Good evening. My name is Byron Jolma with Jolma Design. Mailing address is P.O. Box 1281, Battleground 98604. And I'm the civil engineer of record and just here on behalf of the owners Wade and Ruthie Monio.
Okay. Your first name is Byron?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And first off, duly noted that you do not like plans rotated. Sometimes it's a little difficult when the lot is laid out like this to get it on a...
I understand. Try to avoid those lots in the future.
And then, yeah, I do apologize for the incorrect street notation there.
Yeah, it seemed like it took it out of Le Center.
Well. So, first off, with regard to changes, we don't have any substantial changes. At this time, there were some comments made in the staff report, which we will address to help clarify specifically some of the stormwater with the technical information report and also with regard to the site distance issue.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, yeah, what do you think you're going to be able to do? What's your plan?
Well, we agreed with staff on all of their findings. Except for that one, I was a little perplexed. I thought that it was, I think anyone that's been out to that, on that road can attest that there's the actual speed is certainly not 50 miles an hour. It's essentially a dead end road. I don't know if the county has any plans in the future to connect it to there's a leg of it running, I believe, north and south. But at this juncture, it kind of ends. And so pretty low volume of traffic. It aligns with the driveway right across the road, and we were able to get over 300 feet of site distance. So I was a little disappointed that it was not approved, and I did not get a very good, what I felt was an answer as to why it wasn't, when we could, especially having to go through a riparian habitat area and as Mr. Bazala said, there is an existing logging road, but that would have to be abandoned.
So you need 500 feet in each direction?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Wow.
I felt like we met the warrants for in the county code for more than one of the approval criteria. But that was a little surprising. We did look at other locations along the frontage there, and quite a bit of it is encumbered by the that riparian habitat area.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it is a tricky problem. How about the alternative of the access off the common driveway, which has its own problems? Is that you'd have to construct that common driveway to a private street standard?
Well, as I understand it, only to the point where it's serving more than four lots. So I don't believe the entire length of it would have to be 20 feet wide just to, once it gets past to where it's serving the four lots. So essentially after it gets by those first two lots, then it could go to a shared driveway standard. However, I believe that picture just previously showed that existing logging road.
Mm-hmm.
Go back right there. Yep. I think that's so you can see it goes through that, and you can see the there's a little log bridge or something there, and there's a culvert that was installed as part of the forest practice. But again, that would be abandoned according to the forest requirements. So we were hoping to stay out of that and sort of isolate that lot on the other side of that.
So that's where this driveway would have to go?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Okay. Well, you've got your work cut out for you to figure out how to get access to lot two. What if you could reclassify the 384th to have a different speed?
I did. I reached out to David Jardine on that, and boy, the process for getting that changed, and the owners felt like they would have the neighbors' support in doing that. I reached out. It's a little bit like pulling teeth. It's kind of a process to get the speed limit changed, and it didn't seem like it was. Yeah, it was just a fairly cumbersome process, but the owner is certainly interested in facilitating that or helping. Hmm. But it seemed to be at the pretty.
Yeah, pulling teeth is not that tough when these things become brain surgery.
Okay. Well, it's all relative. Yes.
Yeah. In the land use world, pulling teeth is nothing.
Okay. Yeah, but yeah, we would. Yeah, we were, like I said, we were a little disappointed. I didn't feel like we got a good, real good answer on why when we had an opportunity to avoid the riparian habitat area and it would align with the driveway across the road, and we had over 300 feet. I felt like it met certainly the safety standards or that criteria, an equivalent safety and functionality, but also just the, you know, that with the topographical and the habitat constraints, it felt like we met both of those criteria. But and then with regard to the fence line, so, and I apologize if that neighbor is there. I'm speaking on behalf of the owner. I know they wrote a letter to the neighbor.
This is along lot two?
Yes, sir. And they did write a letter. I believe the letter to the owner, and my understanding is that he was aware that they were planning to remove that fence and that they notified him ahead of time, and so we didn't think there was an issue there. If we had to move the lot, as I understand it, the size of the lot or the cluster is driven by the percentage, that 65%, is that correct?
Well, part of it is the overall density. You have to have that minimum 27.29 acres, because when you multiply that by 1.1, you end up with 30.0 acres.
I see. Okay. So you're talking about
six lots.
Correct. Okay. So it's that. Yeah. Yeah. So I do know there was, yeah, it was, pretty nip
darn
and tuck.
Close. Yeah.
Yeah. His brother, the owner's brother, is the neighbor to the south, so he may have enough to do a boundary line adjustment. I don't know. You can't. If his is already just conforming, then that wouldn't be an option. So,
well, it's a curious thing that doesn't exist in Oregon law, but in Washington it does, that these encroachments have to be resolved before final plat approval. And so we have a standard condition that gives a range of options for resolving it. So,
sure. Yep. And yeah, Mr. Bazal has been very clear on that. And so, yeah, if additional documentation or something is needed, I'm sure they'll be happy to facilitate that.
Okay.
And yeah, the great to know on the lot depth there. I wasn't aware that code had changed. So. We've run into that challenge before.
How about the driveway for the existing, for the remainder lot, the existing house?
Yeah, I'm not sure what. Well, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what, how that veered off or what.
Over the years.
Maybe someone was had a little too much of an adult beverage when they were laying it out. I don't know how that happens, but
these roadways migrate over time. Old.
Yeah. I know it's pretty steep over there, so they might have been following the path of least resistance. I'm not sure how that.
Okay. Anything else?
No, sir. Again, yeah, I just want to thank staff. They've been great to work with. This has been a somewhat challenging, but yeah, I think we have a viable, feasible plan, but we'll certainly more than happy to entertain any questions, both from you, Mr. Examiner, and also from members of the public. I was a little surprised. I was hoping they were all here for the first one, but
no, they're excited about your project.
Yeah. So, always happy to answer questions, and I know the homeowners as well would be any concerns. Be with it. They would be happy to listen and see what we can do to address those. We like to tackle those obviously early on, but also just they want to be good neighbors.
Yeah, they have to live there. They're going to be not moving to California anytime soon.
No, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify in favor? Anyone with neutral testimony or questions? Come on down. Name, rank, and serial number, yes.
My name is Dan Spencer. My address is 7201 Northeast 384th Street, LeCenter. That it? That work?
Yep, that's
okay.
Good enough.
A couple of simple questions, actually. I was curious, and I don't know if it's part of this, this may not be part of the stage of the work, but I was curious if there are going to be any CCNRs involved in the construction of the dwellings on this in this cluster setup.
We'll get an answer to that.
Okay, that'd be great.
It's not required. So.
Not required?
Yep.
Okay. Not happy.
Do you want CCNRs?
Sure. Okay. I was thinking for example, masonry fireplaces versus zero clearance fireplaces, things of that nature. Garage, I don't know if they're going to, nobody is privy to the plans at all. I don't know if the owner, and I understand he's going to be the developer, but if he's got any plans for what the houses are going to be like. But I'm just curious if you drive through the neighborhood, you'll see that there's some very nice places and there's some
older style.
Yeah, older style, but that's still in very nice shape. And so,
yeah. Understand that the process tonight is just the creation of these lots.
Right.
And the county can't really dictate what goes on them, what they look like. And so that'll come later. And so it is appropriate to talk to the owner. See, it may be that what usually happens is people like the applicants here, they create the lots and they'll sell them to a home builder.
Mm-hmm.
And so that builder will, they've got plans or whatever, and they'll do their thing. And so oftentimes the development applicant, they're totally out of the home building part of it, much less the design. So feel free to ask.
Okay. Thank you. Regarding water, this section here,
water supply.
It's on page 17. It addresses, if I might read this, this land division was approved without water rights and is therefore required to meet groundwater permit exemption requirements within RCW 90.44.050. Mm-hmm. Unless water rights are obtained, the total combined water use by the lots in this land division is limited to 5,000 gallons per day. I'm just curious, how are you going to measure that?
I don't.
Okay, how is it going to be measured?
I don't know. I don't know how that's measured.
It's wonderful to stipulate a limit, but how does one know?
Yeah.
Are they going to put meters on each well? Are they going to? Because I don't know. That's why I thought I'd ask.
Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, it's not exempt, and they have to go through a much more complicated permitting process if it's not an exempt.
Which would be water rights, that kind of thing.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Which probably would be very.
Nobody
difficult.
Wants to do that.
Okay. And that's all I had at the moment.
Okay. Then hang out, and we'll certainly buttonhole the property owners afterwards, or see what the we have by way of final rebuttal from the developer's consultant here.
Okay. Actually, I might make one more comment. I was going to ask this, but it had been addressed earlier in the discussion this evening. And if I might read this, I've typed this out. Code requires 5 acres per lot for subdivision action. As the plan stands now, an actual total of 30 acres is required for a 6-resident development. The shortage, which is 27.32, is larger than 5 of the 6 lots suggested. Wouldn't it be more reasonable to reduce the total number of building sites to 5, thus staying within the required 5-acre minimum per building site? I have a hard time understanding the 10% bonus, so to speak. But this way, if you eliminate lot number 2, which is the small one, the 1.56-acre lot, that solves your driveway problem.
Thinking like a developer.
That was a double bonus there, yeah.
But you're not thinking like the property owner.
Well, no. I've got enough property of my own, thanks.
That's just a suggestion. That's the dilemma for this development. It's how to deal with that access for lot 2 and the problems and complications that it poses, maybe more than it's worth.
Right. I'm hoping that's the case.
We'll see.
Right. Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else with neutral testimony questions? Come on down. Is there anyone else with neutral testimony? Because you have 3 seats here. So we can stack up.
Can I just ask a question before I get started so then you can tell me that you can't tell me anything?
You can't do that. You have to sit down, give your name and address, and then ask your question.
Okay. My name is Karen Dillo.
What's your last name?
Dillo. D-I-L-L-O-W, and my address is 6107 Northeast 384th Street, La Center, Washington, 98629. And so I understand the road needs to be widened, and so I have questions about that. Who pays for that? How are they going to do it as far as what side of the street, both sides, because there's telephone poles there on one side, there's cable on the other. As I was leaving tonight, going down towards the stop sign to exit this and go out to the main street, there's huge tall trees right there. So there's a lot of factors there. So
understand it's just this frontage.
That's
just the frontage of this property. It's not the whole road. This property owner only has control over the frontage here.
My understanding was that the street had to be widened from
the whole thing all the way down?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And plus,
so it's all within the existing right of way. That's just undeveloped right of way.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're not talking a lot of additional width, generally speaking.
Well, it would be. I measured it, sir, and it's depending on if you go from solid to solid. It's only about 14 to 15 feet wide. My understanding is it needs to be 18 feet wide. Is that correct? That's in the report. Okay. So 3 to 4 feet. I'm just curious. My property is to the west of this development, so everything goes by me. And my garage is, I've only lived there 5 years, but my garage is closer than anybody else's to the street and had to be some kind of, I don't know all the exact things, but permitted in, and they had to make exceptions for this. I'm just concerned about them widening the road, and they can't. If they go on the north side, I'm on the south side. You got telephone poles right
there. Is your garage in the right-of-way?
No.
Okay.
No, but it's so anyways. And the other point I wanted to make was the speed limit. Yes, there is no speed limit sign. There's nothing. And, yes, people go down there 50 miles an hour, and these owners are one of the people, and I've talked to her, and she knows it. I'm just saying.
Well, 50.
There is, I know, but that's so what I'm
It
asking.
Doesn't really matter. 50, because it's not posted, 50 is the presumed speed. It dictates the slight
distance. I understand, but if you got more houses going in there, more kids, more dogs, more this or that, you're going to have 50 miles an hour? That's all I'm saying on that. And so my other question was, I guess that's mainly what I'm concerned about. Is the road and the speed limit.
Yeah.
And water and the water rights, too. I'm concerned because if you're putting more houses in, and my other understanding is one of these lots is going to have a shared well with the property owner, plus, and you just keep adding all these. How do they know there's enough water there for everybody? How do you determine, you know, the level of the water? And I know you can't answer that, but
well, state law.
Who do you talk to about that?
Well, the state Department of Water Rights.
The road, like the road. Who would you find that out from?
The road.
Yeah, and the posted sign. You know, no, the speed limit.
Well, county engineering.
That's who you talk to.
They can give you information about the road. How this developer actually widens this road is kind of up to them mm-hmm. within that right-of-way, just widening the travel surface.
You might not know, it's just who has to widen the road. I mean, the county says it has to be a certain width. Does that mean the property owner is responsible for that because he's put in a development, or is that the county going to widen it because of the property development?
That's not anything that I deal with.
Okay, but how do I find that out?
Ask these gentlemen after the meeting tonight.
Okay, that's cool.
They can give you, refer you to people in the county.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. You're next.
My name is Wendy Young, and I live at 6701 Northeast 384th Street in La Center, 98629. My property borders the east driveway, and there is the small pie shape.
When you say the east driveway, is that the existing driveway?
The long one that goes to the back parcel. Back.
Okay, got it.
Okay, and I'm on the east side of that. And in looking at the drawing, a very small portion, but I have no idea how many feet it is, pie-shaped piece of encroachment from the easement.
Where this driveway strays off of their property.
Right. And it...
So it strays onto your property?
It's encroaching over, according to the drawing. Mm-hmm. And also my neighbor, who can't be here, but the driveway appears to be primarily all on her property, which is that back little section there. Mm-hmm. So I just want to go on record as saying I don't really want this subdivision, number one. It's R5, been zoned that way. I don't know why we can't just keep it that way. And the other is...
Zoning's not changing.
Pardon me?
The zoning is not changing.
But you're having lots that are less than that.
Cluster subdivisions are allowed under the county code.
Okay, well, I don't like the cluster subdivision. I'll just go on record as saying that.
Okay. Well, I understand the center is surrounded by a lot of cluster subdivisions like this.
Well, and the other thing is that I just would like to go on record as saying I want the easement corrected so that I don't have anything on my property.
It's not an easement. You haven't granted an easement, right? It's a driveway. So the driveway has wandered in a net.
From what I was told, it was a 30-foot easement that they got for that driveway. I never signed any papers or anything for the easement. Doesn't affect me as far as I wasn't the one that granted it. It was Wade who gave it to Dean to get into his property. But they have pushed it over onto the east two properties.
Okay. Well, it has to be resolved in some fashion.
Yes. I want it resolved or unapproved, one or the other. That's
okay.
It.
Okay. Thank you. You're next.
My name is Brian Ellis, and I live at 6303 Northeast 384th Street. I'm not connected to any of the property lines. However, my concerns are, I'm just going to keep it short because it's similar to Karen Dillo regarding the road and safety. I do have three kids.
So 384th?
Yeah, 384th. I do have three kids, and I moved out here from downtown Vancouver to, you know, live in the country and allow my kids to play. Not that they play in the road, but so I would be concerned about the road and the safety of all that are involved that live on that road. The concerns caused by adding more houses, more people, more cars. And then also I would like to piggyback on the water rights issue. We all have wells out there. There's only so much water. You know, again, that would be my issues. And the environment, the wetland area, I know stuff's been surveyed, but, I mean, I don't know any of that, you know, technical stuff. I would ask that that would be looked into more scrupulously as far as that, but that's all I got.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So we're kind of straying into the opposition category here. So,
oh, sorry.
This is, should I throw all the rest of you into the opposition category? Okay, that's where we are. All those opposed, we have someone here now.
My name's Tom Davis. I live at 6307 Northeast 384th Street, La Center, Washington, 98629.
Okay.
And to start with, I would like to say that I've read the whole report several times, and for the most part, very good. I don't want it to happen, but I'm not somebody who wants to be able to tell somebody what they can do with land they have. I don't like being told what I can do with land I have. But there are some concerns, and there was some stuff mentioned earlier that I would like to address that directly relate to me. I am on the property right next to Lot 2.
Okay.
There is a fence down in the back portion of that that's been there since the early 60s. This was my grandfather's property. Mm-hmm. The two that I'm on and the three right next to it that Brian is on. And so it's been there a long time. I'm definitely not okay. My fence is not down. My fence across the front is down. I'm going to be putting something else back up. But my sideline fence was left up for a reason, because I measured property line from the center stake they had on 384th. Mm-hmm. It's real easy to do. It was only 132 feet.
The fence is?
No, that's from my front of my property. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's really easy to grab a tape measure and go 132 feet. If anything, it would be farther, not shorter. And that's where my fence was.
Okay.
Okay, I didn't pay big money for a surveyor, but I didn't go down this long ways down the side. I just went my 132 feet that my tax lot says I have. So Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You erected the fence? Or the yes. fence has been there for
a while? In the front. I've been there almost 20 years.
Okay.
So the fence in the front, I erected. The fence in the back's been there since 1962.
So when you say the fence in the back, is that the one along the property line with Lot 2?
Yeah, it's if you look where Lot 2 ends, mm-hmm. right there.
There I go, so.
Actually, the picture you had up there was really best. Right where they're back, they're proposing right there. That's about where the fence post and the barbed wire and everything starts. It's old. It's there. I left it there for a reason. It's the property line.
Okay.
You know? And I'm going to throw this out because I got a question. I did not see it on here. There's another encroachment that I don't see mentioned here at all, which definitely could affect the 27 point whatever acres. So at the back of my property, keep going right there, if you come down to the bottom, to theirs, off of 60th Avenue, there's a property, and that guy's had that fenced forever. And the survey they did has their line 8 foot on the west side of the fence. I know there was conversations, but I'm not seeing that mentioned at all. I'm seeing my little one where I've got a foot or two.
Does that ring a bell, Mr. Bazala? Let's check the survey.
And I know one time way back when my grandfather owned this, there was, especially with that property, the guy was pretty angry at the time, and there were a lot of words, and that country as this country was back then.
You mean when the fence was first put up?
The one for the other property owner, because if the survey is right, then I've got property that that guy has taken from me. But that's not why we're here. Okay. This is me. So this area right here is the fence goes to right in there somewhere on this guy's property. There's a really nice fence.
Not showing there.
Yes, correct. A really nice, heavy duty. It's been there for a very long time, and it's still in really good shape. And it's at least 8 foot. So I just, you know, if that's been resolved somewhere and somebody signed something, then there you go.
So the survey doesn't reflect this encroachment? Surveyors pick those things up right away. Fence line called for, indeed, not showing exact fence locations with this survey. Okay.
If mine's a concern, that's definitely a bigger concern. So land use findings 2 on page 6. Are you okay with me going on?
Yeah.
Mr. Kearns? Okay.
Go for it.
The clustered lot location and everything like that. Lot 2 is the one I really have an issue. And the owner and I have talked some. But there's never been an agreement, hey, I'm not claiming what is mine. Mm-hmm. There was a question, and I got a letter one time, did I want to get rid of maybe my back acre, and I could have this acre over there, and I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. I have an A-frame home that ranches out, and last thing I want is looking at a house right in my backyard through all those windows, which is one of my biggest concerns. What happens on lot 2? It really is. As you can see, and you have the picture. Can you throw the picture up of the actual properties? Yeah, the overhead. So you look up there, and you do see the two houses side by side. They're already close, and now we're looking at putting another house in there. And that habitat area it covers a lot. So it amazes me that they're saying there's room to actually put a house in there. It's in one report, it looked like, okay, we're going to build a two-story house, which really, I know, that just set me off. That was emotional because I finally have a view out my front window once they cut the trees, you know, and now you want to put a two-story house out there in the middle of the country, and that's what I'm looking at. And I know you already addressed that you don't do that portion. What I would look at if this actually happens is that they put it beside. So, because it's addressed a lot in here, the habitat area, the environment, and everything like that. But you have existing structures and people have built out there. And what I'm hearing in here, and I hope Wade would do it, is the good neighbor to where if something's being built, it's not going to affect, you know, my country lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I don't want to tell a man what to do with his property as long as he's within the law, okay? At the same time, as long as it doesn't adversely affect me either. I mean, and so that's kind of where I'm at. I heard it mentioned from Jan over here. He used the phrase, it's lot two, or the lots are pretty much 1 acre of buildable on it. Lot 2, I would say, definitely is not 1 acre of buildable land on it. Because the repertorian, or what do you call it?
Riparian.
There is so much there. It just amazes me. And probably the last thing I want to address is the driveway for Lot 2. I was very happy that everything staff said was, you can't go on to 384th. The people drive I mean, I live right there. They drive 50 miles an hour all the time. My house, when I first went to build in 2000, that's where I was going to have my driveway. And I got declined to be able to have my driveway there, so I had to flip my whole house and share a driveway with the lot right next door. You know? And so...
All because of this issue.
All because of this issue. Yes, it was line of sight. So line of sight has not changed. It's still line of sight. So if Lot 2 ends up happening, if that fence thing on the other one all gets resolved, I would ask that you guys stick with your findings because I think it's the right thing to do. And you got to use the other driveway. You got to upgrade that way. You know, I heard the homeowner's representative say, well, we don't want to affect respiratory and or whatever it is that much. And I'm sorry if I got that wrong. But by building on Lot 2, I believe you're doing that more than anything else. I would suggest, and this ain't going to happen, that you grab the 17.76 acres they want to keep, you run that up into Lot 2, and you get another lot down on the other corner and get your other lot down there if that's the way to go. Because you are affecting the habitat there. So there's probably a lot I want to say, but that's the only thing I think really is relevant
yep,
tonight.
It's relevant.
And I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Anyone else opposed? I'd like to testify. Mr. Jolma, final rebuttal.
Well, first, I want to thank the folks who testified here. I actually really admire and can appreciate and like to see when people are involved. I hate to be the bad guy, so to speak, but I understand trying to preserve the culture and the area, your way of life. I understand all that. I do appreciate, I believe it was Mr. Davis's comment about there's that fine line between telling someone else what they can do with their property and also trying to preserve your own way of life. And I thought all the comments were very articulate and valid. And again, I do appreciate the feedback. And I'm going to start at the beginning. I left my pen up here, so I apologize if I get this wrong. But I think the first one was with regard to the CCNRs. And, at this juncture, I can't speak for the developer, but I don't believe there are any plans to have CCNRs. They can be, it can be a plus or minus. I don't know what his intent there. I will say this, though, the one benefit that they have of the living there is that they get to pick their neighbors. So I would expect that. They're going to be pretty particular with regard to who they sell to, but I can't promise that as far as a certain type of fireplace or anything, I couldn't speak okay. to that, but I kind of doubt they would be restricted. But and then to the next, I don't remember if he had any other. I believe that was Mr. Spencer that had that comment. But and then the young lady who was concerned about the widening of the road. Just to be clear, so we're not widening the entire road. What we're doing is just installing two turnouts or two areas that will be widened. And we did consider just like she had mentioned, there are there's very steep slopes on one side. You got a pretty substantial ravine part way down the road. So it was certainly not feasible to widen that road. And so what we offered as mitigation, which the county is amenable to, is just providing two turnouts spaced from Christensen Road that would, and we tried to put them in areas that would not impact or had the minimal impact. again, working on memory. As far as the water rights and the wells, that was a very question that's been a concern here, especially with some recent legal cases that have over in Spokane, which, as I understand it, it's the 5,000. A typical residential use is not anywhere near that, but it's a great question. How do they regulate that? I don't know, but I would be careful about proposing ideas, because if it affects one person, it would everyone. So they started to, but we could get to that point. But yeah, I believe you're correct. At this juncture, there's no way to regulate it.
5,000 gallons is a huge amount.
It is.
So yes, to exceed that, you're irrigating a big ag area or major lawn watering. It would be noticeable.
That's correct. And then moving on, as far as that driveway to the east there, one thing I want to make sure, I don't remember on the survey if he actually surveyed that driveway. That could be our, or I'll take the blame. We pull these in sometimes and we pull in the aerial photographs, and sometimes we lay it in there. I don't know if that was specifically shown on the survey. But either way, yeah, if there is not an easement, if there is an easement on that other property, typically it does run with the property, even if it's sold. I know she had a concern about if there was an existing easement and she didn't sign off on it. I don't think you can take away somebody's right of access just because you buy the property. But again, I'm not a land use attorney, so you could speak more to that. But that,
Jan, is the does the survey show that driveway off the property?
No.
Yeah. So that's probably just our
driveway at all.
Yeah. But we can get him out there to confirm and to that it is where it's supposed to be.
Because I think it just shows up in the preliminary plan here.
Yeah,
which isn't really a survey and.
It wasn't all the information. Some of that is just based off of aerial photography, which can be 10, 15 feet off.
Yeah, it's not a substitute for a survey.
Yes, sir. And then I might be jumping around here, but as far as the lot two there, that's why we show a conceptual plan, because the county, when they review that, that's the intent, is that you need to show that a single family residence can be built, feasibly built there. And we do, according to the buffers that we have shown, we felt like we met the code and that you could put I don't know why, if it says two-story, there's no, but I would certainly encourage him to talk to Wade and see if he can work through that. I know, and maybe even the one way to dictate what happens on your neighbor's lot is to own that lot. So that and I know that Wade had talked about that early on, having those discussions to see if he was interested in purchasing it.
Because as I read the preliminary plat, what it shows are building envelopes, which is basically the setbacks for each of these lots.
Yes, sir.
So there's a lot of room in there just as a dimensional exercise to build a house on lot two.
And I know there's a comment on the site distance. The sight line that would have been measured a little bit up the street, which would have been less sight distance than we have. There's a crest curve there. So I don't know. We measured it 15 feet back and, according to the code requirements, and we showed a little over 300 feet of sight distance. And then there was a comment about moving that lot. In one of the cluster provisions is that the cluster lots have to be contiguous. So we can't necessarily just take that lot and move it arbitrarily on some other spot. They're kind of restricted to that general area there. And I'm trying to remember some of the other comments. The fence line there. Yeah, I don't have an answer there with that fence that he mentioned. I don't know. Typically, that's a major item that the surveyor would pick up.
Yeah, usually they do. That's how I think about them.
I don't really have an answer there. I can't speak for him or why it wasn't, but I don't necessarily have a specific rebuttal for that. And Yeah, the speed limit. I will talk to Wade and Ruthie personally about the speed. As I understand it, that the that road is there. No one should be driving 50 miles an hour, let alone. I mean, no one. Yeah, it's a. So, I don't know if there's a way to put some mitigation sign, even some caution signs, if Public Works can do something like that. I'm sure the applicant or the owner would be willing to bear that cost as well if it was something that
post 50 mile an hour.
Some kind of limit sign. Well, no, post not an advisory sign, not necessarily the like a speed limit sign, but just the yellow advisory signs. That could be something that I'm sure they would be willing to consider.
Well, I mean, 50 mile an hour is the presumptive speed, and that's just what you're stuck with on the sight distance issue.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fine. I'm just talking about just from a safety standpoint. There's been multiple concerns raised with regard to people, the speed driving. So that could be something that they would consider just as a, if there's any kind of an advisory sign that we can post. Like I said, I'm sure you'd be willing to do so. And, I apologize if I'm forgetting some of the other comments or concerns, but.
There's Mr. Davis who owns the property next to Lot 2 and does have a problem with the fence removal. So that's something that, I mean, staff is out there. There's a condition that deals with it, and you just have to meet that condition.
Yeah, it was my understanding a letter that he was notified, but I apologize if, I wasn't privy to those early conversations, but I understood when Wade said that he notified that he was going to take the fence down. I don't want to speak for him, but I'm sure, hopefully it was email or there's some kind of a record of it. But ultimately I know I can speak for them that they want to be good neighbors and I know they can appreciate change is difficult, but we feel like we meet the code requirements according to, the county requirements.
So. Okay. Well, you've got this. You'll have to deal with Lot 2 access. There are a couple ways to do it. None of them particularly easy. So,
But the hope would be. I mean, we can show that we would prefer not to have to construct it as a part of final plat approval. We would prefer to show it as an easement and put that onus on the property owner in the future. But. Especially if that lot, if he was able to reach an agreement with the neighbor there, then that driveway wouldn't be necessary at all. So we would hate to construct it and have to do all the improvements, and then nothing ever gets built on it. Well.
Yeah, it's a big deal to lose one lot out of a basically a six-lot subdivision. So, okay. Anything else?
No, but I'll stick around afterward. I don't buy it. I like to hear people's feedback. I really do. I think it's important to, and like when neighbors get involved, and I think it's, so I'll be happy to stick around and would encourage everyone to go over there and meet them and voice your concerns and maybe there's a way to help offset some of those.
Yeah, start the conversation. They turned out, so.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Anything more?
Yep.
Yes, regarding the width of paving 384th.
Yeah, Mr. Examiner, there were a few different views expressed at the end there, the applicant's engineer. I just wanted to clearly state that the county is requiring or suggesting that you require, as part of your decision, that the entire road out to Christensen Road should be widened to 18 feet minimum. The way that process would work would be the applicant would propose widening along that stretch as part of their construction plans, and the county would review those. And you know, obviously the county would be happy to consider the neighbor's concerns at that point. That's how that process works. And then the applicant is responsible for constructing that. It's their expense. And I also, there were a few other...
Well, how does that figure into the how the first road modification was dealt with?
The applicant requested a road modification. Now, the county code requires 20 feet of all-weather surfacing for off-site for any road accessing a development in the rural area. So they requested to construct passing turnouts as proposed on their plan in lieu of widening. The county considered the request and recommended approving their requests, but with the stipulation that the road had to be widened out to Christensen Road all the way, including off-site. That's what the county code, would require 20 feet of width. What the county is saying is the road modification could be approved if they install the turnouts and widen to 18 feet.
Okay, instead of 20 feet the whole...
Correct.
Okay. So it's 18 feet plus turnouts is the county staff's position.
Correct.
Okay.
I also wanted to make sure...
How far away is Christensen?
Boy.
About 3,400 feet.
3,400.
Okay. Something like that.
I should also say that there's a section of the Clark County Code in the criteria for considering a road modification. It says, in reviewing a modification request, the county shall consider the applicable factors that include but are not limited to the following, and then it states self-imposed hardships shall not be used as a reason to grant a modification request. That's in Clark County Code 40.550.010C. So the county's view is that the applicant's engineer proposed the driveway to Lot 2 at a location where site distance could not be provided. Mm-hmm. It's a self-imposed hardship. There are other options along their property frontage of Northeast 348th that could meet the site distance requirements.
So presumably the main shared driveway to serve the four lots meets site distance.
Correct. Then there is a condition of approval that says the applicant has to certify that the site distance at that any proposed access location will meet the required site distance.
And there are other places it could be put. I mean, other lot configurations, but got it.
And I should also say the county has a process for evaluating speed limits. The county suggested to the applicant when we notified them that their requested road modification for site distance was not supported on May 21st. We suggested putting the project on hold. Could have allowed some of these issues, including the site distance, to be potentially resolved. The applicant wanted to proceed with the public hearing as scheduled, and so that's one reason why the speed limit request, possibly, which I don't think it was ever formalized as far as I'm aware. But
I personally don't know how the change requests work, but I know they're not easy to get.
You're correct, yes. So, and I think that is all that I wanted to clarify, unless you have anything that I could...
No, but those are important points. Thanks very much for bringing them up. Okay. That's it? All right, with that, I will close the record on this one. I got to tell you, cluster subdivisions in a rural zone generally are kind of vanilla. This one isn't. It's got a lot of issues associated with it. So I appreciate all of you coming tonight and giving me a full picture. And Mr. Jolma got informed about your concerns. And so I will issue a written decision on this one in approximately 2 weeks. Thank you. And that concludes tonight's hearing.